We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome once again. I'm Mike Claiborne, and we have a chance to visit with one of my favorites as a player. He was a great interview, and he was a good player with the Cardinals. Had a very good major league career, Gold Glover, made the All-Star team, and was just an all-around good player for the Cardinals and his career in the major leagues. He is Fernando Vina, and it's great to have you.
Thank you, buddy. It's always great to be with you and spend some time with you. This is a very good time for me.
It's been a while because you haven't been through here as much, and you got to start coming through St. Louis a little bit more.
I would love to. I definitely want to get back in here and be, you know, I played for this organization, be part of the organization, and be on the field a little more and enjoy it. You know, this is good times here.
Well, for you, you probably had your best time in your big league career here in St. Louis. So All-Star game, Gold Glover, and you were on some pretty good teams as well.
Without a doubt. I was traded over here in the winter of 99 from the Milwaukee Brewers. And that day when I was traded, boy, it was a good time because I knew with Tony La Russa and Walt Jocketty, they were putting together a squad. So you knew you were coming to win, and then I remember from being a visitor playing here at this in St. Louis, how great the fans were and how supportive of players they were, regardless of visiting team or, you know, the home team. They always knew what a good play was. They would clap for that. So, you know, you enjoyed it, and it was just – it's almost like a college atmosphere here with the fans. They're just so supportive. So when I got traded, it was the best thing that ever happened to me.
You know, you mentioned the fans, and I bet I've heard that a million times, and – Albert Pujols was recently through here, and the ovations and everything he got. And I was talking to Mike Trout about it. And Trout said that Albert tried to prepare him about how the fans are, because he'd never been to St. Louis before. He tried to prepare him, and he said, this is 10 times more than what I could ever imagine how fans treat players, even from the opposing team. When, as you mentioned, you make a good play, they give you your credit when it's due.
Yeah, I mean, this is a special place, and there's nowhere – you hear it a lot, and it's a cliche, I think. It's, you hear it so much, but there's no place like St. Louis and the way the fans treat you on and off the field. I mean, whether you're playing here or you're in a shopping center somewhere or eating somewhere at a restaurant, it's amazing how respectful they are, how nice they are to you, and how supportive they are to you. So, yeah, those times you never forget. I still speak to Albert regularly. He's obviously in Anaheim now or Los Angeles. Playing and we talk from time to time, and boy, he knows how special it is, and I know it, and I think players that have done it, it's a time you never forget, and it's a time with everything that comes along from being a Cardinal, with the history, with the, you know, Stan the Man and Bob Gibson, George Kissel, I mean, these different guys, Ozzie Smith, who helped me a ton, just so many names and history here that you come in and you say, hey, I just want to take that baton and keep running with it, and that's what you try to do as a player.
And run you did, because when you got to St. Louis, that was the first time the Cardinals had a regular second baseman beyond one season for a long time. That was kind of like the wiggle room position where it was Grusinlonik and a number of other guys who were here for a cup of coffee. You had a pretty good run here, so what was it about you and your relationship with Tony and the other guys all, as you mentioned, started to come together?
I think it was just – Tony's an amazing manager. What he brings to the table, his passion, how prepared he is, I think, as a player. You feel all that. You see all that, how supportive he is of you. I think all that coming together, and when I got traded over here, I felt it and I knew it going in from playing against Tony with the A's prior to that. So when I got here and he was the manager and we talked and man, I mean, he's just all about winning. And I think that really rubs off on the players, and he's all about supporting you. You look at what Walt Jocketty did. He kept, you know, making trades, Edmonds and Edgar Renteria and myself and Daryl, the late, great Daryl Kyle, God bless him. You know, there was always winning in hand, and they wanted to make sure they put a good team on the field. And thankfully, thank God, we were able to put it together with the leadership of Tony, who commands a room like nobody else.
It's interesting you bring up Tony in that regard. As you've noticed, you watched the game has really changed.
Yes.
And I think Tony and your crew may have been the last team where it was such a demand to be better every day. I think we accept mediocrity in the game more now than we ever have. And I see good managers who really have to walk a fine line to make sure they don't lose a player, let alone lose a ball club. But you guys policed yourselves. Tony was obviously the ringleader, but he put you in a room with a bunch of other guys who understood what winning was all about.
Yes, yes. I think you kind of watched, and everybody knew what you needed to do. We had veterans that picked each other up, and we had young guys. I mean, Albert Pujols came up. Mm-hmm. Bobby Bonilla got hurt in spring training, and there you go. Albert had his chance, and the rest is history, as we could say. But, I mean, I think if you look at Tony and the coaching staff that we had, Dave McKay, I'm leaving out some coaches now. Akindo was there, who was a special guy. George Kissel, who, God bless him, I love him to death. So many guys that were veterans that have been around the game, been around so much. And the special thing about Tony is, regardless of the 25 different personalities, he knew how to get the best out of each guy. That's what I think separates a great manager from mm-hmm. a good manager. Tony knew how to fire myself up. He knew how to get under my skin a little bit. I'd get upset if he got under my skin. So he knew.
That meant he liked you.
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. So he would get under my skin a little bit, and that would make me say, you know what, I'm going to show Tony that I mean business. And he knew when he had to, you know, maybe pat a guy on the rear end a little more to get them going in that direction. So overall, this team, the coaches and our mindset and the way everybody patrolled themselves, Jim Edmonds was huge in the outfield patrolling everybody, and our infield was, you know, golden with the, you know, Renteria, Roland, myself, McGuire, Matheny behind the plate as a gold glover. So I think we kind of kept each other going, and that was a very special time in not only my career, but I think for the Cardinal baseball also.
Man, you know, you mentioned some of those names. Maybe some of the smartest baseball players. I mean, Jim Edmonds is one of the most observant players I've ever watched play the game. Even today as a broadcaster, he sees things that most people wouldn't pay attention to. Renteria was the same way. And you guys work so well together up the middle. How long did it take for you guys to come together? Because that's a chemistry position. You have to have a feel for each other, because if you don't, somebody's going to get hurt out there.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with Edgar, thank God, it was a time when I got drafted over here and Edgar was already here. Mm-hmm. We kind of got in sync quick for some reason. I think we have that Latin background. We both speak Spanish. We both are hungry to play and to win. And I think when we practice, we practiced hard and we did it the right way. And we practice after practice to make sure we were in sync. And that's what it takes to be the best player that you can be. So, you know, Edgar and myself, the combo, kind of came together. George Kissel, Jose Akindo, our infield guys, got us going with a ton of ground balls. And when you do that, and you do that at a high level, and you trust him, and he trusted what I can do, and I kind of knew his moves from watching him prior with all the great years he had prior to being in St. Louis, his different movements of how he went about his business at shortstop, and that helped me to continue to get better.
Fernando Vina is our guest. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with more after we take a timeout. Welcome back, everybody. We continue. Fernando Vina is our guest, and it's been a while since we've had a chance to visit with him in St. Louis. And I want to go back to those teams you played with. What was the best team you played on? Because they started to come together, and all of a sudden it was like, all right, it's not how we're going to win, but how much are we going to win by?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we had a very solid team. You got to thank Bill DeWitt, the ownership group, and Walt Jocketty, who was putting the team together, Tony La Russa, our manager. I think if you look at what they did in 99 and the year prior, and then in 2000, we won the division. So that was huge. So to put some players around us with McGuire, Albert came up, and we know what Albert's been able to do. Edgar Renteria, Polanco, Marrero, Edmonds traded over here from the Angels. Mm-hmm. I mean, just a lot of top-notch guys and players that we were able to kind of gel and get in sync pretty quick and win some ball games, and that's where the winning started in 2000.
What was it like to be part of that McGuire experience? Because we've never seen anything like that, and you know, I thought he was a great distraction for the rest of you guys to be able to go out and do your job on a regular basis. Everybody paid attention to Mark. And if you might have been fighting it or whatever, we'll get to Vina later. We'll watch McGuire hit for a while.
Oh, he was amazing. The beautiful thing I liked about Mark, not only obviously the show he put on, or because of the player he was and the home runs he hit, you know, the zoo kind of from the media mm-hmm. and everything else that came around with it, he's a great man. I mean, he's a solid player, solid team player, and never really acted that way, that he had so much attention. So I think, you know, it didn't really take a lot from us, even though the media was all over him. He kind of knew how to keep it calm and tame it so it wouldn't affect the whole ball club and kind of stop us from winning or kind of get the onus onto something else that it was just him only. So he was that way, that he was almost a guy that didn't like all that attention and kind of kept it smooth for the rest of us to do our job as a team.
And you know, it's interesting. I'm sure when you guys would go on the road, there was some places you go. Let's, for instance, Wrigley Field. You get a bunch of reporters in there, and it's hard to maneuver in a place like that. And for him, I knew he felt like, okay, they're not going to be here. They're only here because of me. But he respected his teammates and tried to make sure they had enough room to breathe as well.
Yes, definitely. That's all that together. He was a class act in that way. I mean, you look at in Chicago, like you said, in the clubhouse there, I mean, we were on top of each other. Mm-hmm. And McGuire has, I don't know, 20 or 30 different reporters in front of him. So it kind of took away from the locker that was by everybody else.
No locker next to McGuire, man. You'll never be able to get dressed.
Not at all. So it was something that, like I said, he really knew how to react to it, how to treat it. And I think it didn't really affect the other players as much as you would think with all the attention Mark McGuire and the type of player he was and what he was doing at the time.
You mentioned when you came over from Milwaukee, you were a good player there. But you got here, and you mentioned two guys, in Okendo and Ozzie, and George Kissel, will make it three, that really helped your career. What was a turning point for you as far as your career and what they were able to implement that made you an even better player that eventually led to being a Gold Glover?
I think really as an infielder, I came over. I was always quick and had good feet,
good hands,
good range. But I think once I started realizing that I needed to slow down some. Some people think when you need to slow down, that's going to slow you down overall. But it's almost the opposite. Once I slowed down, I looked quicker and got quicker other ways. Which
you let the game come to you more.
Yes. Slowed the game down. Slowed my feet down a little more. Didn't try to do too much. I just tried to keep it slow and would just. They taught me. George Kissel was huge. He would hit me 30 different type of ground balls, and Jose Okendo also that are backspin, topspin, slow roller to the left hand. Glove side, you name it. The different ground balls, and I think learning all these ground balls, and I'll never forget what turned the corner for myself. George Kissel told me, Vina, I need you to feel the ground ball, but when you feel the ground ball, I want you to hold it. I want you to hold it, and if I don't see the button on the top of your cap, you know what that means, my head's down and my eyes are looking into the glove, you're not doing it right. And I'll never forget that from George Kissel. And God, like I said, God bless him. He was special for me and helped me a ton because he didn't need to care about me like the way he did. And he told me, look down at the ball, see the ball in your glove, and don't try to rush out of there. I think a lot of us infielders have a tendency to not even really, you look at it quietly, quickly, and you turn your head, and that's why ignorant errors happen. So I learned to really hold the ball for a second, and he told me, hold it. Hold it there for a second, lock it in and see it, and then keep going. And boy, when I learned how to slow down like that, that just helped me become a better infielder. I stopped making the little ignorant errors. And it's amazing when you do it that way, because as an infielder, and if you want to be a good infielder, and this is the way I teach kids today, you have to slow it down, and you have to get in these positions that you don't realize you're in when you're rushing through them. You don't realize you're in it. If you rush through them, you're done. Your feet aren't down. You're rushing through the play, and when you rush through the play, bad things happen. So I learned to slow it down, and that helped me as a player in a game. You don't think that way, but subconsciously, you're slowing down.
It's interesting you bring this up, because I think we watch big league infielders and they make it really look easy. I mean, and that comes with thousands of ground balls, but they slow it down to a point where it looks easy. But playing in the middle of the infield is hard.
Yes.
I think it might be one of the harder positions in the game, especially with so much going on around the bag. But what was the starting point for you? Because as I mentioned, you went from coming to St. Louis, working with Kissel and Ozzie and Okendo to being an all-star and being a Gold Glove guy. You mentioned slowing it down, but when did you feel like Fernando Fina's got this figured out where I can do this every day and be good at it?
I think it was work, repetitions after repetition. George Kissel and Jose Okendo would hit me ground balls. I would pick Ozzie Smith's brain and get as much as I could. I took in as much as I could, and I would take bits and pieces that would help my style. Mm-hmm. And when I started slowing it down, and I mean, we would do it every day, I got more confidence. I not that I would make a lot of errors prior, but you would make some little ignorant, cheap errors.
You
kind of rush through them.
You said it earlier, ignorant or cheap errors.
Yes.
Because you know in the back of your mind, You know, it's always the one that's a mental error.
Yes.
Because we all going to make the physical mistakes. Yeah. That comes with the game. But when you make that mental one, I'm sure you just kick yourself and, it beats you up.
Yeah. It beats you up. So I took that to heart, what George Kissel told me. And he would tell me, he'd sit there and tell me, Vigna, I need to see the button on your cap. And I would do that over and over and over. And, man, it started coming to me. And I said, wow, this is I'm seeing the ball every time. I'm not going to make an error. And I started learning. I took that to other parts of my game, whether it was turning a double play, mm-hmm. getting my feet down. I would make sure I watched that and tuck my eyes the whole time into my glove when I turned double play so things wouldn't pop out ever. When I'd go up to the plate and hit off the tee, I would make sure I seen that ball for a long time. I wouldn't take my eyes off it until after I made contact, then I would look. So just different
areas. It's just like the golf swing.
That's it.
I mean, keep your head down.
You'd be surprised, And, you'd be surprised how good it works when you trust it and you put it into your arsenal as part of your game. That turned me into a decent infielder. It turned me into a gold glove infielder.
Well, you know, I think when we talk about slowing it down, the guys who don't do it enough, they probably feel, I got to get the runner. You know, if you still slow it down 99.9% of the time, you're going to still throw the guy out. If you do the mechanical things right, you're always going to be in a position to throw a runner out unless he's like, you know, a world record 40-yard dash guy or something along that line.
Lou Brock or Willie McGee or Vince Coleman.
If he beats you, then good for him.
Tip your cap.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Fernando Vigna is our guest. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We'll visit more with Fernando after we take this break. We continue with Fernando Vigna, former Cardinal, who was a good second baseman for the Cardinals, had a great career. I want to go back to something, and this is where the game is changing. And this is when you were in Milwaukee, and I think most people who watch the game remember you and Albert Bell. And I remember watching it, and Albert Bell was as strong as an ox, and, you know, he went in hard. And I was sitting with somebody. We watched. I said, you know, if this breaks out, I might take the little guy here. Because when you popped up, it was like, hey, Poppy, I'm here. You know, I'm not going. And I think it kind of surprised Bell because, you know, he was this big, gruff guy, strong as an ox, who had kind of made a living at trying to clean out people. But you popped up as like, hey, you know, I'm going to be here this play, the next play, and anything you want to do beyond that. Yeah. What was that moment like for you?
That was, I was in Milwaukee, and we didn't get much TV coverage there. So that almost, as bad as it was.
You reminded everybody Milwaukee was in the
league.
Yes,
yes. And Fernando Vigna's still alive. Exactly. He's hitting over 300, and he's in the league, you know. So, unfortunately, bad things happened, but other things were positive. But, you know, it was one of those things, like you said, Albert Bell was built like a linebacker, mm-hmm. you know, and he blew me up. I took it for granted. That play, I kind of grabbed the ball, and I was turning two on my own. So I went to try to tag him on one foot. Worst thing you can do with Albert Bell coming in. he cleaned my clock. But at the end of the day, like you said, I didn't fumble. You know, I kept the ball in my hand. I got up. I was upset. He ran off. And you know, things happened later in the game that were, you know, part of protecting each team and each player. But, yeah, it was one of those plays that, you know, I was going to turn an unassisted double play myself. I was going to catch him while he ran through. And he got under me, and he really just blew me up, which, you know, people still talk to me nowadays. They still play it on MLB Network all the time. The 50th, greatest plays or something when they blow me up. So I get to hear all my buddies, the text. Come on, let's talk about something more positive,
but
can
again,
we?
You just kidding. You stood your ground. And yes. That's the thing that caught my eye right off the bat. I said, you know, if they come together, I'm taking the little guy here because I think he may have a shot. You know, that's the area that's changing the game because you were part of the last generation where you really had to protect yourself around the bag. Now, you know, guys don't go in as hard. They've got the rules to protect the middle infielders. But what was it like for you? And you mentioned your quick feet, and I think that's the reason why you didn't find yourself on a disabled list a lot more, being able to judge who was coming down and what they were capable of doing before the rules were implemented.
Yeah, I mean, there was times there. You couldn't slip at all over there. You had to be ready. I learned to turn a double play. I learned to get my feet down. You know, that was it was huge. I think if you look at from a double play standpoint, you got to get your feet down or you're not quick at all. I don't care how quick your hands are. If your feet aren't down, you're not going to be a quick double play pivot man. And I think that goes the same way from an infield position that we talked about earlier. Once that ball is getting ready to cross home plate, you got to make sure your feet are down. I think you see a lot of infielders these days, they're not ready.
No.
You got to be ready. You got to get your feet down. If you're not early, you're late. And the only time you see these guys making web gems on TV, great plays, Ozzie Smith was ready early. early. He get his feet down early.
I got news for you. When he's at the fantasy camp and he's just taking balls around the back, he's still doing the same
thing. Oh, he's got that rhythm.
It's just so good. And I'm like, Ozzie, nobody's coming. See, yeah. You just never know. Yeah. But he still maintains that same mechanics that kept him alive in the major leagues.
Yeah, it's like riding a bike. I mean, but he knows you got to teach kids these days that I work with too. You got to get your feet down prior to that ball crossing home plate. So that means you got to be aware, mm-hmm. alert. You can't really fall off out of the game at all. So it keeps you focused on that pitcher, because some pitchers have different windups, different rotations to get to home plate. So some are going to get the ball there sooner, some are going to get the ball there later. So you always had to be on your game and on top of it to be a great infielder. And when you talk about the double play turns, I had to make sure I got my feet down. I'll never forget, the guy that would blow me up the worst is Ricky Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, he wouldn't slide.
He's so strong. Oh. He'd go right through the bag.
And
if anything was around the bag, they were going to get it,
so
too.
So thankfully, he'd go right through the bag, and it would take me with him. So thankfully, my feet weren't down, because if my feet were down, that's how you blow out mm-hmm. a knee or two yeah. knees. But thankfully, I learned early on that I had to turn the double play, get up in the air, so when his body weight was coming against my body would take off with him, and we'd both land on each other, and that would be the end of the day. But, man, that was a guy you'd look over at him before the ground ball was hit, you know, anticipating a double play ground ball, and you'd look and say, oh, shoot, that's Slick Rick.
Yeah,
I got to make sure I'm quick, and I got to make sure I'm up in the air, and that's what a guy that I'll never forget.
He was strong as an ox, too, man.
He played fair, it wasn't bad slides,
yeah.
but he knew how to take advantage of it and just blow through the bag.
Who was the guy that you had to be who played on that edge where some people would say it's hard-nosed baseball, other guys would say, hey, he's trying to get somebody hurt?
There was guys around the league. I'm trying to think of guys that were that way. There was a guy on the Cubs that played hard like that. And, you know, I think I really can't it'll probably come to me here, but there were so many guys that at that time, you know, there was no rules in place mm-hmm. around second base now that you're protected. You don't have
right.
to worry about that. So it was a whole different type of a ball game when you know, your backside is the runner's coming into your backside. You have no clue of what's going on. So nowadays, I think then you had to be ready. Nowadays, you can, I don't know if you can relax more. I'd play the same way, but you don't have to worry about getting blown up. And those days, the rules were the rules, and they knew you could slide late, and like you talked about earlier, slide through the bag instead of just getting to the bag. Slide through the bag, and you make a game-saving slide for a ball club that was trying to win a game or save an out. You mm-hmm. never know. You take the second baseman with you, and that ball might get thrown away, and that run scores around third.
Then you get those guys with that pop-up slide.
Oh, yeah.
Like Luke Brock used to.
Yes, yeah.
He could break up a double play with that pop-up slide. And there's a few guys that still do it, but now the rules are so defined. You don't see it as much as you used to, but it's still an effective way to make a difference in a game.
Definitely. I mean, that's the way you slide, and, you know, that's why you got to take – offense, defense, and base running. So, you know, you got to really have it on the top of your list to be the best that you can be, because, you know, your secondary leads, the way you go into second base, the way you round the bags, cut the corners, those are huge to from winning a game and losing a game. And that's why these days, teach these kids and help them learn to be the best you could be, because there's so many angles of this game that are so special to help you win a ball game.
He's Fernando Vina. I'm Mike Claiborne. We're going to talk about teaching when we come back, so we invite you to stick around. We'll be back after this. Welcome back, everyone. We continue with Fernando Vina, former Cardinal, who's in town. We have had a chance to catch up a little bit. Let's talk about teaching a little bit, because I know that's something near and dear to you, and you've done a few things since you've gotten out of the game. You were involved in broadcasting for a while. But I hear a lot of guys who enjoy teaching. It's something that we miss. There's not enough good ones left. And when you have guys who have a passion for the game like yourself, I'm sure it's rewarding as they continue to grow. And they may not be big leaguers, but at least they'll understand how the game works. And they may end up being teachers someday.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I take a lot of pride in that now. I mean, it's something that I was kind of raised with. My parents, my dad, my mom left Cuba on a boat and brought me over here in 1968 to have a chance in this world. So that kind of all that work ethic, creating good habits, all that kind of comes together with what my parents brought me to do and how they got to the United States with, you know, a couple suitcases. So the way I love to teach kids these days and kind of, you know, adamant about it is help them create good habits early and teach these kids the little nuances of this beautiful game that can help them be better. And like you said, Michael, that you never know if they'll make the big leagues, But I'm a firm believer when you teach them and they create good habits, you're going to help them in life in general. So it doesn't matter if they become a big leaguer, play pro ball. They'll be great citizens and great human beings because of the things you learn.
We can use a few of them.
Exactly. Yep. A lot of them. So, you know, the things you teach as a ball player, discipline, the teamwork, picking your next guy up, you know, just being on top of it to do things right on a day in, day out basis, which this game is crazy with so many games. I think all that helps to create a great kid and a great human being to make everybody better on top of maybe being a Major League Baseball player.
I asked Jim Edmonds and Willie McGee this question recently. What's the one thing that you see that's a common flaw of young players as they come up? And they both agree that it was pay attention. They don't pay enough attention. You know, Willie talks about when he would go on the field, no matter what he was doing, he always wanted to know where the ball was. That's the start. And the fact that you drill into some of these young players about how to do certain things and they nod and say, yeah, and then they go out and do just the opposite. Do you see that as well as far as kids not – I'm not saying they don't have the attention span, but just in learning how the game is played and maybe studying differently or working smarter compared to the guy who's out there all day until sundown and he's still the same bad player he was but when sunrise came about.
Yeah, definitely, Mike. I think – you look at these players, you know, these days, and the kids growing up, they don't watch the ball. They don't pick up the ball. I think the difference is when we were growing up, we would watch games on TV all the time and learn. And I think now with social media, the phones and computers, you name it.
Yeah.
They're locked in on that. Yeah. So I think they don't watch the game as much. I mean, because the best way to learn baseball is to watch. And you know, TV, whatever the game of the week was, I'd watch games and I'd say to myself, I want to be one of those guys. I want to be a big leaguer, you know, God willing, someday. And you would dream. You never think it would happen, but that's what happens. And you got to pick up the ball. You got to, you know, I think they think it's an easy route. I mean, there's work involved. I think in anything you do that's going to be worth it, you got to work and you got to put in a lot of time. And I think some kids take it for granted, think it's going to be an easy route until you have some adversity, some failure, and then maybe that wakes them up and something kicks in that, hey, I got to pick up this ball whether I'm hitting, I need to get my front foot down early, I got to see the ball early. I mean, there's so much preparation in this game, whether you're hitting, whether you're on defense, or whether you're base running, that you have to do prior to it happening. That sometimes kids don't pick that up. I mean, you got to do a lot of preparation. You got to think things through in your head in this game to be good at it.
Yeah.
Because when that time comes that it's there, if you're not ready and you weren't ready prior that ball gets to you, or you weren't ready by the time that ball crossed home plate to make a great play, you're behind the eight ball. Same with hitting a fastball. If you don't get that front foot down ahead of time, you have no chance to hit.
It's a great point. It sounds simple. It is simple. It's just hard to execute.
Yes. There's a lot of discipline involved, and you got to stay on it. And not only stay on it, in this game, you have to do it, 162 games a year?
At least.
On top of all the other practice games and stuff.
There's over 19,000 people that play this game, and nobody's gotten here on their own. Who was the reason? Who's the person that you played with that took care of you? And who was the person who got you to this level where you were able to enjoy a major league career?
I think, I think it started with my dad coming from Cuba. He played in Cuba, which is, Cuba, that's all we do is play baseball and box. And you know, we just love sports there. And that's the only way, really, to get off the island, you know. And same with Dominican and Venezuela. But you're hungry and you want to be somebody and you want to try to make it part of your life. And thankfully, when my parents left Cuba, gave me a chance to maybe do something in baseball. And my dad loves the game. He watches every game now to this day. And I think that rubbed off on me. And as I got going, as I got playing, there were so many guys that helped me through. When I was in junior college, Orlando Cepeda, the great Orlando Cepeda.
Cha-Cha.
was influential of helping me and kind of getting my mind right to if I really wanted to make this, you know, a career maybe, to have a chance just to kind of get your mind right. I played with his son, Orlando Jr., and we would spend time together. That helped me. I'll never forget my first year in the big leagues. Omar Vizquel took me under his wing.
Hall of Famer. I mean, he should be in. I mean, when you look at his numbers
and what
he was able to do, he was on some teams that weren't very good, and they didn't get the TV exposure.
Right.
But, you know, he had as good a pair of hands and good footwork as much as anyone.
Not only that, and he taught himself how to hit early on in his career.
Kinda
he couldn't
like
really
Ozzie.
Hit.
You know, when Ozzie broke in, he wasn't what you would call an adept hitter, and then all of a sudden you look around and Ozzie's almost got – 2,000 hits, over 2,000 hits, but guy never struck out.
Exactly.
You know, and that's
they put the ball in play
all the time.
That's what's special to me when you see guys like that that came into the league all glove and maybe were so-so mm-hmm. hitters. When you can teach yourself how to hit, man, that means so much because I know how hard it is to learn how to hit, not only in the minors but to get to the big leagues and be successful on a year-in, year-out basis with all the different type of pitches and how hard it is to be consistent. So you look at Ozzie Smith, who helped me a ton when I would come in here to St. Louis when I was with the Mets. He was always friendly. He mm-hmm. was approachable as a player.
Don't you love those guys that want to give something back?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't have to do it. They've had their career, and it was a successful one. But, man, when you get a Hall of Famer like Ozzie, and there's other guys who do it that want to give something back and help the other guys, that just says a lot about what they mean to this game. And that's why the game is so great.
Yes, and the character they show. Because, like you said, Mike, they don't have to be approachable. Some guys aren't, which is upsetting. But Ozzie, to me,
who disappointed you when you were coming through? Because there's always a player that you admire from a distance, and you hope he's a cool guy, and then you meet him, and he's, man.
You know, one of the guys that were kind of he's a Cuban guy. Also, Jose Canseco. I don't know if we remember him.
Yeah.
How could we not?
Yeah, exactly.
But he was a guy. He was Cuban like myself, and I looked up to the guy. You know, he played, had some great years, hitting mm-hmm. home runs, and so forth. And I remember he wouldn't be approachable with me, and I didn't like that. That kind of rubbed me the wrong way, and I just didn't like to be around people like that.
I don't blame you.
You know, I always appreciated guys that were open and kind of gave me their experience, kind of gave me things to help. Kendall was that way with me. Obviously, George Kissel, opened his arms out for me and gave me a big hug and took me in, and so did Omar Vizquel. So these guys, you never forget the good ones and the infielders because that was my position.
Fernando Vina, our guest, will come back with our final segment after we take this time out. Our final segment with Fernando Vina. How much do you watch the game today?
I watch it a lot.
You watch our guy here in St. Louis?
Definitely.
And, Colton Wong?
Oh, yeah. I watch Colton a lot. I watch the Cardinals a lot, as much as I can get them on the TV. And I keep close eye on them. Thankfully, for the Cardinals, I know they're kind of a couple games over 500 now. But the beauty of it is the rest of the division has kind of struggled also. So they're right. They're still where they need to be. So they have a lot of time. And we know this is a long year, and they're going to get hot again. And speaking of Colton Wong, I mean, I love the way he plays defense. I love the way he goes about his business. And a young player that can separate the offense to the defense and be such a very good defender is very special in my eyes. So to watch him do his thing as a former second baseman is enlightening.
Good hands, good feet. I mean, he's got the tools, and he makes it look easy, but that's the same guy that's in Jupiter, Florida in January working on his game before anybody else shows up for spring training. He's already there working on his game.
That's what it takes. To be the best, you have to do that. And, again, he anticipates. I think from an infielder standpoint, Colton Wong is anticipating. Before that ball goes across home plate that one of the other hitters can hit it, he's already anticipating, and that's what helps him go to the right, go to the left, make great plays. If you're not anticipating and seeing it in your head prior, you're not going to be a good infielder. And that boy, he takes that to heart.
I want to go back to something we mentioned earlier, paying attention. If you're not lining up and looking at what the catcher's trying to do, and I know Jim Edmonds would play off the middle infielders and where they were lining up. If you're not paying attention to that element, you're never going to be in position to make the play that's going to be needed.
Exactly. You're going to be behind the eight ball, and mm-hmm. you're not going to make that special play.
You'll be a step short.
Yes.
You're
going to wonder why you just missed it.
You have a little dirt on your uniform as it goes just beyond your glove. Because it's the one little thing I think guys don't do enough of.
The good ones make that play because they prepared and mm-hmm. they see it. And like you said, you look for a changeup. You look that Edmonds was awesome with that. For positioning, you can position a little better. Cal Ripken, look what he did. He was always in good position. He was ready. He anticipated. For a big guy, how was he always in position? You wonder, and that's not by coincidence. That's by working.
Ozzie was the same way. Because Ozzie didn't have a great arm late in his career, but he knew how to put himself in position, and he could do two things. He was in position, and he could get rid of it just like that.
Quick, because you know why he was quick? Because he would get his feet down. Mm-hmm. Not only would he get his feet down prior to that ball crossing home plate, but once he got into his toes, which you got to be quick on the balls of your feet. He was already in position. Once he fielded it, he was in position to throw. So that's huge. When you get your feet down, you can't throw unless your feet are down, and he made sure that they stayed close to the ground, to the earth, and that's how you make yourself a better player, not only turning double plays, but as an infielder, you want to keep your feet close to the ground as possible and not have too much air underneath them because that slows you down.
You watch the game. What do you like about the game, and what are some of the things you just kind of roll your eyes and say, really? What's happening here? What's going on?
You know, I love the game, Mike. It's a great game. I think the times have changed a little bit. I think we're seeing more launch angle stuff with the hitters. They want a home run or strikeout type of deal. I wish come playoff time, you always see you need that contact guy that gets on base and steals a base or goes first to third. I think those little nuances of the game have kind of been slowed down a little bit in this age of the game. You know, home runs or strikeouts is kind of what we've been seeing recently. But hopefully, you know, a leadoff hitter that hits the ball the other way, that cuts the bag real good because he's a good base runner, can get to second, help you win a game, will all come back together. But I think some of those things with the launch angle, with the analytics that are really jumping into the game, they've kind of taken some of the special things of the game out of it.
You know what drives me batty, pardon the pun, is the strikeouts.
Oh, I hated to strike out.
What was the most you struck out in the season?
I didn't strike out much. I hated to strike out. I know. I mean, if you come up my career, even as a little leaguer, I don't think I struck out my whole 3 years in Little League, which is not a big deal. It's Little League. But when I went to Arizona State and I was the batting champion there, I think I struck out maybe seven times the whole year. So to me, striking out was the worst of the worst. And if I struck out, I would never hear the end of it from my dad when I was in the car going home from games. So that even made me feel a little better to try to you have to put the ball in play. We have to put the ball in play. That was I knew my game and what I needed to do to be a team player to help my team, and that's where I had to do. I had to make contact. I couldn't get fooled.
Yeah.
And again, I had to get my feet down, and if I was fooled, I had to make sure I had to learn how to be balanced.
You know, two guys come to mind when it comes to striking out, or because they don't strike out a lot. I used to watch Ozzy 25, 26 times in a year. And then I remember Yadier Molina's first year. He hit like 214, but he only struck out 41 times. So he's putting the ball in play. You have guys now strike out 41 times in a month.
That's it.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's over 100 for the year, maybe close to 200.
Oh, no. Hey,
it's outrageous.
Fernando, we're going to have a 200 strikeout guy this year.
Yes.
There's no question about it at the rate they're going.
And I guess they're okay with it if they hit 30 home runs. I just don't see get rid of that strikeout.
I don't think the reward is as good as they think it is.
Right,
Because it's more of a rally killer than the three-run homer.
That's
trust
it.
Me.
And you talk about Yadi, who's such a special player we all know about defensively, but offensively, he doesn't strike out. He puts the ball in play. He hits the ball line to line.
Mm-hmm.
So when you have a catcher like that could do these type of things offensively, and on top of that, he's a Gold Glover every year, that's what makes it special. He doesn't strike out much. That makes it he's a winning ball player all the way around, the way you look at it. So that's what we got to get back to.
Inside our final minute with Fernando Vina, what's next for you? I know you spend time with your family. You're trying to give something back to the game, working with the alumni and teaching. What's Fernando Vina have next on his list?
Maybe get back on the field with an organization and get closer to these draft picks and help them, you know, mold them. And
mentoring is important at this stage
yes,
in our game.
Yes, yeah. Definitely. Creating good habits. My dad is sick back home with leukemia, so I take care of him and try to keep moving and not look back, you know, when you have some sickness like that. So I try to stay positive. We both do. And teaching kids and creating good habits and helping them be better players, I think, not only defensively, offensively, but all the way around, and we create better gentlemen.
Well, man, I hope you hurry up and get back to the game, because the game needs people like yourself. You were an accomplished player. You were a good teammate and a great professional. So we hope you get back in the game as soon as possible.
Thank you, Michael. I appreciate your time. Thank you for having me on.
Well, we appreciate you. He's Fernando Vina. We thank him for his time. I'm Mike Claiborne, and we thank you for listening.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.